Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, May 20th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, far-right Republicans win contested District 6 legislative primaries. We'll have full election results. Nine incumbents in Idaho legislative primary races lose in Republican primaries. Southern Idaho races benefit the more moderate Republicans. Panhandle races favor the far-right. Hardline gang of eight in the Idaho legislature down to three. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. There were few surprises in statewide primary races in Idaho yesterday. Incumbent Republican U.S. Senator Jim Risch had 65.8% of the vote in his primary as of early this morning. The 82-year-old Risch is trying for his fourth six-year term in the Senate. His closest challengers in the primary were Joe Evans with 14.95% of the vote and Josh Roy with 14.94% of the vote. On the Democratic side, David Roth was winning with 62.6% of the vote. Brad Moore was in second place with 30.6%. In the race for governor, incumbent Brad Little won the Republican primary against seven other candidates with 59.75% of the vote. His nearest competitor was far-right candidate Mark Fitzpatrick of Eagle, who had 27.1%. The bar owner Fitzpatrick has made noise with his constant attacks against the city of Boise and has tried to capitalize on anti-gay and anti-trans hysteria with such actions as organizing a poorly attended hetero awesome fest at the state capitol. He has also offered a reward for information leading to the conviction of Boise Mayor Lauren McClain for any offense. In the Democratic primary for governor, Terry Pickens, who ran for lieutenant governor in 2022, has 62% of the vote. Pickens' nearest competitor was Jill Kirkham with 16.8% of the vote. A wild card in the governor's race is independent candidate John Stegner, who served for years as district judge in Moscow. All statewide races other than governor and U.S. Senate had a single unopposed Republican and a single unopposed Democrat who will face each other in November. In the race for the U.S. House seat representing Idaho's 1st District, incumbent Republican Russ Fulcher had 76.8% of the vote. His nearest competitor was Andy Briner, who had 12.5%. On the Democratic side, Kaylee Peterson, who ran for the seat in 2022 and 2024, won the primary with 87.5% of the vote. Her one opponent in the race, Kenneth Brundgart, a political novice, had 12.5%. Two candidates from the extreme right fended off more moderate Republican opponents in District 6 Republican primaries for Idaho legislative seats yesterday. District 6 includes all of Latah and Lewis counties, plus much of rural Nez Perce County and a small corner of the city of Lewiston in the Lewiston Orchards neighborhood. The winners of all three Republican primaries will face the winners of yesterday's contested Democratic primaries in the district. In final results, early this morning, incumbent Senator Dan Foreman of Viola defeated Lori McCann of Lewiston in a closely watched race. Foreman had 4,243 votes to McCann's 3,806 votes. Foreman says his priority in the coming legislative session would be removing the rape and incest exceptions from Idaho's far-reaching abortion laws, which ban abortions starting at fertilization. The 72-year-old Foreman, who is a former Moscow police officer, is known for his angry outbursts at constituents. At a 2024 candidates forum in Kendrick, he listened to House candidate Trish Carter Goodhart of Lapway speak about ongoing racism in Idaho and then stood up and said, "I'm tired of all this liberal BS," and addressing Carter Goodhart, who is Nimi Poo, said, "Go back to where you came from," and he stormed out in a huff. In another contested District 6 Republican primary, Colton Bennett of Troy won over former Representative Cindy Agidius of Moscow. Bennett had 4,860 votes and Agidius had 3,034 votes. Bennett ran for the seat in 2024, losing in the primary to incumbent Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston. who vacated the seat this year to run for Senate against Dan Forman. Bennett is vice chair of the Latah County Republican Party Central Committee. He told the Daily News at the time he announced his 2024 run, "I really truly believe that in no time in our republic's history have we been closer to losing the America that I love and value." He also said, "My values and my principles align incredibly well with the platform of my party." The Idaho Republican Party has taken a turn towards the hard-right extremism in the last few years under the rule of party chair Dorothy Moon, whose husband, Dar Moon, is on the John Birch Society National Council. Incumbent Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow ran unopposed in the Republican primary for the other House seat, which is House Seat 6B. Democrats also had contested primaries for all three District 6 seats. In the Democratic primary for the Senate seat, Robin Weldy of Lewiston won with 1,344 votes over Richard Gaylor of Moscow, who had 1,224 votes. Gaylor had the lead during early vote counting before Weldy pulled ahead. Weldy is retired after a 25-year career in real estate, which included running her own real estate firm. Gaylor has been a probation officer and high school coach. Both Weldy and Gaylor were making their first runs for office. In the three-way Democratic primary for House Seat 6B, Trish Carter Goodhart of Lapway won the nomination over Moscow City Councilmember Bryce Blankenship with 1,382 votes to Blankenship's 1,169 votes. A third candidate, Ryan Augusta of Moscow, had 84 votes. Carter Goodhart ran against Republican Lori McCann in the 2022 and 2024 general elections, losing each time. She owns Thrive Safety Solutions in Lapway, which teaches emergency response skills. Carter Goodhart will face Republican Colton Bennett in this year's general election. In the contested Democratic primary for House Seat 6B, Kathy Dawes of Moscow easily won over Kenneth Williams of Moscow with 2,394 votes to Williams' 242 votes. Dawes is a retired Moscow science teacher who frequently zooms into legislative committee hearings to testify against anti-education bills and anti-reproductive rights bills as they move through the state legislature. She ran against Republican Brandon Mitchell for the seat in 2024 and will have a rematch with him in this year's general election in November. In southern Idaho, in the Magic Valley, voters rejected four Republican incumbents' bids for re-election in results that favored moderate Republicans over the far-right wing. In the Panhandle's first legislative district, two more moderate incumbents lost in results that favored the far-right. The three lawmakers who lost Republican primaries in the Twin Falls area were Senator Glenada Zwiederveld, who lost to Brent Rinke, Senator Josh Cole, who lost to Case Swenson, Representative David Levitt, who lost to Sheree Vollmer. Also nearby, Representative Steve Miller of Fairfield lost to Chance Requa. The Idaho Education News reports Zwiederveld, Cole, and Levitt were members of the hard-right Gang of Eight. Because of other losses around Idaho, the Gang of Eight is now down to three. In the Panhandle, far-right Republican Scott Herndon won over a more moderate incumbent Republican Senator Jim Woodward of Sagal. It was the fourth primary race between the two, and they each have served in the Senate. Also in the district, Jane Sauter defeated House Education Committee member Mark Sauter, no relation. In District 4, far-right incumbent Elaine Price of Coeur d'Alene won against more moderate challenger Krista Hazel. Perhaps the most consequential race in the Panhandle was Kootenai County's Republican Party Central Committee Chair Brent Regan, who was also the president of the Idaho Freedom Foundation. He lost his precinct committee seat. Regan has run the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee for 10 years, using endorsements to veer politics to the far right all over the Panhandle. The committee has endorsed far-right candidates for legislature, school boards, library districts, and the North Idaho College District. Because Regan because Regan lost his precinct committee seat, he cannot be central committee chair anymore. The more moderate group, the North Idaho Republicans, have been working to dislodge the far-right leaders in the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee. As of last night, all school funding levies on the ballot yesterday in our area were passing. The Potlatch School District's one-year $1.65 million levy passed with 53% of the vote. That's 558 yes votes over 498 no votes. The levy will fund career and technical programs, extracurricular activities, building and maintenance, and special education staff. Local taxes will be $336.67 per $100,000 assessed value. Cottonwood School District's one-year $275,000 levy passed with 421 yes votes over 202 no votes. The levy will fund technology, utilities, substitute teachers, maintenance, food services, and speech and language services. Local taxes will be $89.91 per $100,000 assessed value. White Pine School District's one-year $880,000 levy passed with 66% of the vote, 299 yes votes, and 156 no votes. The levy will fund salaries, security, technology, maintenance, transportation, athletics, and curriculum. Local taxes will decrease from $256.13 to $253.82 per $100,000 assessed value. Cul-de-sac School District's two-year $250,000 levy passed with 64% voting yes. That's 139 yes votes over 77 no votes. The two-year levy will finance building maintenance, insurance, technology, supplies, and student activities. And the levy will remain at $243.18 per $100,000 assessed value. Highland School District's two-year $599,000 levy passed with 61%. That's 272 yes votes over 173 no votes. The levy will fund career technical education, half-day kindergarten, staff salaries, classroom resources, busing, and athletics. The levy will remain at $253.49 per $100,000 assessed value. Or Nez Perce School District's one-year $445,000 levy passed with 214 yes votes and 98 no votes. The levy will fund salaries, special services, utilities, maintenance, and transportation. The levy will remain at $251 per $100,000 assessed value. The Salmon River School District's one-year $525,000 levy passed with 223 yes votes and 165 no votes. The levy will fund staff salaries and extracurricular activities. Local taxes will be $148.69 per $100,000 assessed value. The Grangeville School District's one-year $805,000 levy passed with 1,281 yes votes and 980 no votes. The levy will fund extracurricular activities, staffing, and library services. Local taxes will decrease from $182.16 to $83.67 per $100,000 assessed value. Two bonds and three out of four plant facilities levies failed in school districts statewide yesterday. School bonds, which need two-thirds supermajorities to pass in Idaho, lost in the Kimberly and Rockland school districts. The 30-year bond in Kimberly would have paid $57.8 million to build a new fine arts center and auditorium, gym, community field house, and athletic fields at the high school. 86% voted no. The Rockland 10-year school bond would have produced $3.8 million for construction of a career technical education and agriculture building. 66% voted no. No school district bond has passed in Idaho since 2024. Plant facilities levies, which need 50% to pass, failed in the American Falls, Lakeland, and Payette school districts. The only facilities levy to pass was in the North Gem school district. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and experts are reminding Washington State's Native communities that free support is available to them anytime. Started in 2022, the Native and Strong Lifeline is a suicide and crisis hotline for American Indian and Alaska Native people in Washington. Jeremy Rouse is with Volunteers of America Western Washington, who run the Lifeline. He says it was founded in response to the disproportionately high suicide rate among Native communities, but its use is broader than that.
We operate on the idea that it's crisis as defined by the caller. So it can be something that's really serious and severe, or it can be someone just needs someone to talk to and connect to that day to kind of just help them get through.
People can access the Native and Strong Lifeline 24/7 by calling 988 and pressing 4, by texting N8V to 988, or online. Rouse adds callers can be referred to the Native Resource Hub, which provides support with housing, food, and other basic needs. Washington's Native and Strong Lifeline is the first 24/7 crisis line in the U.S. designed for and staffed by Indigenous people. Rouse says this is key, adding there's a long history of Native people being prevented from caring for each other.
We're the best equipped to take care of each other and support each other. I think that there's certain lived experiences, cultural aspects that definitely help us connect with our callers.
Rouse says between chats and phone calls, the Lifeline has about 1,500 interactions a month. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing commerce and community together through business support, local events, and economic development initiatives. 114 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, 208-882-1800, and moscowchamber.com. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Idaho Chapter and Palouse Group of the Sierra Club, which are building a grassroots movement for climate and ecological justice in Idaho. Sierra Club empowers community members of all ages to advocate for clean energy, abundant wildlife, and outdoor access. sierraclub.org/Idaho/Palouse-group.
The Lehtau and Whitman recovery communities offer peer support for people dealing with addiction and other behavioral health issues. Located on Main Street in both Moscow and Pullman, they have a rotating calendar of life skills and recovery support offerings and a harm reduction program that could help you save a life. Moscow also offers a 24/7 behavioral health crisis center, along with men's and women's sober housing. Most services are free or at cost.
Columbia County has agreed to change their policies after they were found to be out of compliance with Oregon sanctuary laws, which prohibit local law enforcement from assisting with federal immigration cases. The Oregon Law Center filed a lawsuit against the jail after finding that people were being held purely for immigration offenses. Alexis Ferguson with the Columbia County Coalition for Human Dignity says the county agreed to settle the case by changing their policies.
It's really sending a message that if you have policy or procedures that are not in compliance with the Sanctuary Act, you're in violation of Oregon law, and it's very important that you review your intake forms, you review your policies to make sure that you are, in fact, following the law.
Ferguson says Columbia County will no longer ask people where they were born during jail intake or ask them to check a box labeled illegal on booking forms. The county also agreed to stop holding people for U.S. Marshals solely for immigration offenses. Ferguson says Oregon's sanctuary laws, which are the oldest of their kind in the country, reflect the state's values.
And what that's about is really community, and that means neighbors looking out for neighbors and everyone having each other's interests at heart.
Columbia County Jail is not the only one in Oregon that has been accused of violating the state's sanctuary laws, according to Ferguson. He says there are some city jails in the county that are also being investigated by the coalition. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Research from Oregon State University and the Nature Conservancy, published in April in the peer-reviewed Journal of Environmental Research Letters, found Of 1,000 communities across the Pacific Northwest, 459 were at greater wildfire risk than previously thought when adjusted for socioeconomic factors. The researchers came to their conclusions using a social vulnerability index that, among other things, accounted for household demographics, neighborhood structural density, housing types, and local transportation. Researchers also determined 541 of the 1,000 sample communities were at relatively lower risk than previously thought. In a May news release, Oregon State University College of Forestry professor Andy McAvoy said, "Communities experiencing less social vulnerability often have the capacity and resources needed to apply for and make use of publicly funded mitigation. The many communities across the Northwest that are experiencing high social vulnerability have less capacity and fewer resources, but that does not mean they aren't facing the same risk or even greater." The April paper follows up another 2024 Oregon State University research paper finding lack of investment in prevention and mitigation led to higher fire impact in vulnerable communities. They also found that socioeconomically vulnerable communities tend to be smaller, with fewer than 5,000 buildings, and were typically located in drier areas. Study co-author Chris Dunn said the towns have, quote, slightly lower wildfire exposure than some nearby, better resourced communities, but they experience greater social vulnerability and therefore are likely to experience greater impacts if a fire occurred. Researchers say residents' access to resources impact the amount of home hardening, landscape and neighborhood wildfire prevention, smoke management plans, wildfire response, which includes where and how fire stations and firefighters are located, and more. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be partly cloudy tonight with a 20% chance of showers before midnight, low 40. Increasing clouds tomorrow, high 68. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy Thursday night, low 44. And mostly clear Friday through Saturday with a high of 73 Friday and 76 on Saturday with a low of 46 Friday night. Currently 65 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 118-83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.